Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 262. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with that rock and blues boy, Tim Elliott.
And we're here.
That was a witty comeback, Tim.
I don't know what to say about that song. Grant, I guess I'm riding the rails.
All right. Graham Thickens.
Hey, happy sunny Saturday.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
How you doing, the boys?
Awesome.
Is this out of copyright music? Is that what this is? Or
hey, I got it off Music Alley. I have pretty much exhausted the top blues songs. So I'm not that I'm scraping, but
no, I think it's
getting harder and harder. Yeah. We got to listen to the whole thing.
You've had a lot of good surf music too. Kind of exhausted that, I think, maybe.
Well, it's kind of fun to listen to some of these and then also to discover an artist and then realize, oh my gosh, he's gone. You know, he's been dead since 2005. You know, that kind of stuff. It's like, I guess I won't find any more of that music. But
okay. So imagine, everybody, that you get on the interwebs to listen to your weekly dose of the Minivate Gang podcast. And you hear us talking very slowly. You know why that is? Because we can't afford to pay for fast lane service. That's why.
It's true. Yeah.
Well, now listen, the reason I say that is I wanted to lead with the whole net neutrality thing, because I think that is clearly the biggest news of the week and clearly the most important to us as internet dweebs that we are. So I wanted to lead with that.
And okay, Phil.
Though I couldn't necessarily come up with the most witty way of demonstrating it. We got some issues here. But then again, I say to myself, what do you expect from an FCC chairman who used to be a cable lobbyist?
Yeah. Well, so the whole debate is the FCC is proposing new rules on net neutrality to essentially enable, as long as it's not non-competitive or working at cross purposes to consumers' rights and so forth, but that they're proposing new rules that essentially enables organizations, the ISPs, to charge for faster access to their networks. That's essentially what this is all about. And right. Netflix was one that did it, obviously, and all of that. But what's happening is there's just this explosion of tech industry people who are against it, you know, who are saying, look, I mean, what it's going to do is it's going to provide the ability for incumbents and existing organizations to pay because they've got the revenue and all of that. But essentially, it's going to kill innovation. Because, I mean, you know, if this would have happened, 4 years ago, Netflix never would have taken off. You know, if you could use, an on-demand service from your cable provider who has service at the head end and your stuff is coming across beautifully and instantaneously and all of that, and then you get this Netflix thing that's all aliased and choppy and icky, you're not going to pay $7 a month to watch stuff on that.
I believe verbiage like icky is actually in the bill. So
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, it's frustrating because it's once again another example of giving more power to the haves and taking power away from the have-nots. I'm always amazed when this sort of shit comes out. It's like, oh my God, is anybody really thinking about this? No.
Yeah.
Well, it's a proposal. It hasn't been adopted yet.
Right. No, but it's a proposal that, you know, is a complete 180 from where the FCC was last year.
Well, I'm sure that Senator Franken's going to stand up and scream bloody murder, right?
Yeah, well, that won't do any good. But you know what I was amazed by is
he hasn't commented on this at all.
Not at all. Well, and so here's that's because the Obama administration is clearly aligned with the producers of content. And so that's
Hollywood.
Well, so here was what amazed me was the Wall Street Journal comes out. I did a post on Minivate about this. The Wall Street Journal came out and said regulators are proposing new rules on internet traffic that that would allow broadband providers to charge companies a premium for access to their fastest lanes. And Forbes also had an article about this, as did Bloomberg Business Week, all of them discussing the anti-competition that this would enable. And actually, the Wall Street Journal came out with a follow-up today that talked about the notion that the FCC would examine these potentially anti-competitive rules and then rule on whether or not they were anti-competitive. And they were basically saying, yeah, like they're going to, fly to Washington and ask if they can do this every single time? I mean, what happens with a startup that wants to get, you know, access and what, I mean, they have no money. What are they going to do? Are they going to fly out to DC and say, hey, I really want to do this. Can I have access?
Yeah, but see, that's where I don't connect with this. What do you mean have no money? These startups get funded hugely, richly out of, you know, risk capital out of Silicon Valley primarily, as did Netflix. You know, they're hardly poor boys. So, you know, can some startup in bump, you know what, South Dakota, start up with zero capital and become an internet powerhouse? Yeah, maybe in your dreams, you know, with no capital. I mean, is that,
well, I'm not,
let's,
no, I'm
let's
not,
be realistic.
But it is one more barrier to entry. I mean, come on, well, Graham, it's a barrier to entry.
Capital is not a barrier to entry. It really isn't, you know. That's where that argument comes apart in my mind.
Well, except
Netflix has had an extreme advantage, despite the fact that they've, you know, been a very well-funded and fast-growth kind of a company. And, you know, so, you know, I'm kind of sick of hearing Reed Hastings whine about this. What would you expect, you know, a self-interested CEO to do? You know, I mean, that's what they do. But if
the playing field is truly not level, then you can't play. I mean, this goes back. Do you remember when the only way you could get a telephone handset was through your Bell company, and you could only lease it? You couldn't buy. Yep. You couldn't put your own equipment on because they had essentially they were controlling what equipment got on there and so on. And this is a really old argument, but you know, the same thing could hold true that there could be discrimination against access because of others being able to pay for better, faster access. And it's going to change the dynamics of the internet. It's not going to be open anymore. It's going to be, my stuff's going to work better because I happen to have a war chest of $10 billion and I can buy, you know, several hundred million dollars worth of peering to all the major ISPs. So no matter what, my stuff's going to be there instantaneously while everyone else that's trying to get into the game is going to be up in the stands without a uniform on. They can't even get down to the playing field. So.
Well, I think that it's premature to get all excited about it. It hasn't been approved yet. There's going to be a lot of scrutiny, and the reaction on the internet has been very negative.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I think that politically it's not going to be, it's going to be watered down. It still may not be, you know, that people are happy with it at the end, because the internet has to evolve and change. It can't be the way it always was.
Right.
Yeah. And this is part of that change process. So people aren't going to be happy because it's going to be different, and it'll probably cost more too. You know?
Well, if you read nothing in that post that I put together, read the update, the FCC denies desertion of net neutrality. This was in Tech News World in the tech law area. And they talked about, you know, the potential ramifications. The hard part about this is it's not black and white. I mean, there's so many levels of gray in there. And there's so much nuance to this whole discussion. But one of the things that one of the attorneys said is that this FCC in the proposal is barring unreasonable commercial behavior that can harm the internet. And this one particular attorney with Curtin McConachy, this law firm, said effectively what it does is invite litigation for the next decade about what's harm to the internet. And right. And so it's going to have to be watered down, because lawmakers are not going to allow a door to be flung wide open to essentially slow down innovation or stop it.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah. The word reasonable, which it appears in the proposal, it's like I read where that's the most litigated word in history.
Oh, really?
Oh, geez. Yeah. Right. So, you know, how do you determine what's reasonable? But, you know, I was going to say, Steve, the same Wall Street Journal that you referenced a little earlier came out and today and noted that what was I going to say? That the well, there's an opinion piece in the journal that, you know, where this is going to lead is to metered internet, and the American people don't want metered internet, but you know, the next step after, if this net neutral position, you know, carries through, will be government regulated utility. Yeah. That means full metered pricing, and who wants that? So what the journal came out, you know, on is that you know, that people don't want that, and you know, so it's you know, and the other thing they said is that the Congress has never authorized the FCC to run the internet. A lot of people don't understand that, but the FCC does not have that authorization. They may be trying to get it, but they don't have it.
Yeah,
so right, that's right, another right, thing right. A lot of people don't understand. And the FTC comes into play too, and some say this is like sort of a battle between the FCC and the FTC to you know, for control. But you know, I don't think any of us wants the internet to become like a regulated utility. I don't. I don't know about you guys.
Well, you know, it's again, this gets into a whole nuanced and subtle kind of thing. Is that you know, if it was like our roadways, for example. So now we have this beautiful interstate highway system, and we've got all these feeder highways and yada yada yada. Well, now we literally have hundreds of billions of dollars of investment to redo roadways over the course of the next decade. Not maybe not hundreds of millions, but billions. But we can't keep pace with the amount of infrastructure that we have, and now add internet to that. You know, would we be in even a worse position? I don't know. So
free market. I say free market. How about you, Tim?
I don't think it's as bad as people are thinking it's going to be. No, yeah, it could go very, very bad. It could be a terrible change. But I just think that politically, it's not going to be good for whoever's in power to support a non-free and open internet. So the FCC will have to back down in some way. I don't see this going through, and I don't see that everything is going to be metered either. There's got to be a middle ground somewhere.
I don't know. I think it's naive to think that common sense will prevail.
Well, that's true.
Right. I mean, if you look at the raft of crap that is pushed through the government right now, and it's like, what the? I think that just relying on common sense is, and I no, look, I don't want to be overly reactionary, but it does. It's that continuation of giving power to the people with more money than those that don't have it. And I think it's one of those things that needs to be brought up. Is it a, you know, lives will be lost thing? No, it's not. You know, no lives are going to be lost because of it, at least at this point that I can tell. I don't think you have to give up human sacrifice to get fast lane service, but yeah, you never know.
Do you guys,
I think it's one of those things that you need to be aware of, and you need to voice your opinion on. We have a couple of links that we'll post in the show notes that get that done. Thanks to Steve for doing that mining. Well, I'm guessing Steve, or was that Tim was in there?
Oh, well, Tim did the show notes, and there's a bunch of other links in the post as well. Yep. But do you guys by any chance remember a service that started in 96 called At Home? It was out in California?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So when that first hit, there was, you know, an unbelievable amount of bandwidth. It was something like, you know, 200 kilobits per second to start, you know, and then they went up from there. And at first it was symmetrical. So your speed up upload was the same as your speed download. And that's how it is with fiber optic today. But what was interesting is I actually had a buddy who lived in the at-home area out in the Southern Bay Area. And he was all excited because he put a server, a bulletin board server on the network.
A BBS.
And he was so excited about it, blah, blah, blah. And then one thing led to another, and they ended up throttling the upload bandwidth and changed their terms of service to say you could no longer host a server on your own network. Now, the reason I bring that up is because that's something that nobody misses right now. Nobody's even aware when they think about upload speed on their internet connection. It's kind of a non-issue. But one of the things that it killed was the personal cloud, you know, being able to have your own server where you could serve all your stuff. Now, there's a lot of companies that have drives. You know, Western Digital has drives, and then there's the Pogo plug, and there's all kinds of different technologies that allow you to serve up your own website or serve up your own image gallery or have your own stuff there to stream. But in reality, it's a really, really fine line and a gray area whether or not that's violating terms of service. Because
to have your own personal server.
To have your own personal server. And in theory, too, I could punch a hole in my firewall and use the web server on my iMac and just leave it run all the let it run all the time. And that you know, the letter of the law in terms of the terms of service means I'm violating Comcast's terms of service. And so, you know, those are the kinds of things that people don't even realize that innovation was crushed. And that's the kind of thing that I'm.
You can, if you want to, you can run a server at your house. I mean, you can buy it. You can buy that. It costs more than just using it on your regular home-based internet, but it's still available to you. So just because Netflix and other companies have worked on loopholes where they get a lot of free bandwidth doesn't mean that should be, you know, it's their God-given right to get that, because it costs someone money to for that bandwidth, right?
Right.
So they built their business. Aereo has built a whole business based upon what they believe is our loopholes in the copyright laws. That's also being argued right now at the Supreme Court. So I mean, stuff like that just happens. And you know, I know that a lot of people are saying that the internet's dead and that, you know, that it's over and, you know, it's going to change and all this. I just think that's overreaction at this point. I think that it's such a vital communications medium common sense will prevail at some point. Now, it'll be different and people probably won't like the changes, but I don't think it's going to be as big of a problem as everyone's making it out to at this point, because everyone's going to the worst case scenario, which I don't think will happen.
Well, that's how you get people fired up. I mean, that's why there are calls to action, and people are concerned because they are afraid that the internet's going to be over as we know it. But yeah. But again, I'll come back to the fact that one of the reasons that I went to the Comcast Business Service instead of residential, and you know, I'm paying significantly more for it, is the 4-hour turnaround in customer support. That was the most important piece for me. But also
because you like to bitch.
Yeah, but no, but yeah, I like to bitch. But it's there's no cap on the bandwidth. And the other bonus is at night there aren't businesses on the network, so I actually have faster speed, but that's another story. And so That's all good, but the terms of service still disallow putting servers on the connection. And so you can't really, I mean, I couldn't really serve a website. I could, technically, it's simple, but I really couldn't serve it because if it was starting to get any activity and there's a lot of upload and they were able to easily identify that there was on port 80, there was a web server serving up a relatively high volume site, which I would never do anyway, because it's just stupid. But anyway, you could see that they could just send me a cease and desist and I have to turn it off. So there's no opportunity to do those sorts of things.
Right. But if you wanted to, you could pay them more and that would be allowed. I mean, it's not like you can't do it. You just have to pay more for it.
A lot more.
Well, there are alternatives. So, that's why you go to web hosts that charge, $10 a month or whatever, sure.
Sure.
Go to Amazon, AWS, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of alternatives. So,
yeah. Yep. It's cheap and getting cheaper in the cloud, baby. The price wars.
Yeah.
So, you got that option.
So what do you think, Phil?
That's a good point, though, Graham, is the cloud would really be changed if, this whole net neutrality thing goes the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if this Aereo case goes the wrong way, because, I back up all of my MP3 files on Dropbox. That would be legal if Aereo loses their court case.
Mm. And if they lose, they said they're just going to shut down.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
So what do you guys think? Are they going to win or lose?
The networks have also said if they lose, they're going to stop giving it away for free.
Yep.
Not broadcasting.
Yeah. Yep. How can they do that? Well,
I don't know if they can, but.
Well, they can't. They can change. They don't have to put their A-grade content on free. What they could do is, okay, well, we're going to put everything on cable now.
Yep.
And over the air is going to be like that. What is that over the air channel that
TV or antenna?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 Antenna TV. So it's going to be old Andy Griffith.
Which I would watch religiously.
I know.
That and C-SPAN.
You're a big Barney Fife fan. I know.
I am a big Andy Griffith fan. Let's talk about Andy Griffith for a while.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Well, it's I get a kick out of watching the Aereo case, the whole concept of, all of these little antennas instead of one big antenna. That's the one question they always tap dance around when asked by, the courts. It's like, okay, so why can't you do this with one antenna? Well, because that would be illegal.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So it's a very novel hack to get around the law.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you want to see it succeed or do you not want to see it succeed?
Well, I think that as a consumer, I want to see it succeed, obviously. I mean, I think it's more choice will be better for all.
I do have a hard time. My first glance is, even though it's, all the antennas are all on one farm, you think to yourself, well, it's really not any different than having another TV if it's going through your computer. However, if you're paying for that service then they are profiting on providing that service. So it's a very tangled sort of a thing.
Well, so, the other part too is my wife who travels a lot, she was in Paris and she sometimes says, I gotta be honest. I sometimes get bothered by the fact that really the only thing for me to watch is CNN because it's in English. They've got the English channel. That's it. Of all the stuff that's on TV, not that she's a TV watcher, but she talks about how she'd love to be able to access things back in the States, but all this stuff's blocked by IP. So she can't get in. Well, now Hulu just came out yesterday and said that they were blocking the port ranges of popular VPN providers. And that's been one of the ways that I've gotten into BBC One, because I'm landing at a UK server, so I'm a UK resident supposedly, but it's be very easy for them to block the IP ranges and you're screwed. And so, there's stuff like this going on mainly because everybody's figuring out workarounds, but I would love to be able to, for example, set her up so that she could use the Aero antenna service from Paris when she's in her hotel room and watch whatever if the Grammys are on, she wants to watch the Grammys. She can do that because she can connect up to the antenna. And I'm sure that what the providers are worried about is, so what'll happen is then people will give out their credentials to all their friends. Mm. And they'll all do it too. Or they got a friend over in Sweden and so they're going to be able to watch.
Does that happen?
No, everybody follows the terms of service of every service to the letter.
Hey, Steve, so I assume Slingbox doesn't work outside the U.S. then?
No, it does.
Oh, well, yeah. Why don't you guys use that then?
Have you ever set one up and used it?
No, never even tried, because I don't travel that much where I would ever use it.
Graham doesn't get out much.
I was going to say.
I don't watch much TV, so why would I want to watch TV back home in my hotel room when I travel, which I'm rarely in anyway?
Yeah.
Is it really hard to set up?
It's a pain in the ass.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't. It's more bother than it's worth. And for her, she always, people laugh. They come over to the house and we've got four remotes sitting on the table because, you've got Blu-ray, the Apple
TV. Because it's Steve's house after all.
and everyone goes, oh, we just only have one remote. Well, because you don't have all the functions, even on a multifunction remote. You don't have all the functions you need. And then, you can barely figure out how to run the four, let alone if they're all combined.
It gets even worse.
Well, that's kind of what it's like with a Slingbox. Yeah, you can set all this stuff up and you can do it, but then accessing it, it's a pain, and it's more bother than it's worth. Just buy a book.
Yeah, really.
Just read the thing while you're in your hotel room.
I'm sorry. What is this book you speak of?
Yeah. What's that thing?
Well, I don't understand. Is that one of them there things that looks like an iPad?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is this pulp industry you speak of?
By the way, my son had a couple of buddies over and we were out talking and I just jokingly said, yeah, well, it's because it's Hammer Time. And they looked at me and went, what's Hammer Time? I was like, seriously? Because one of the guys, I think, is 24. I go, you guys really don't know what Hammer Time is? It's like, oh my God. So maybe it's that way with books at some point in the not too distant future.
So Steve, what is Hammer Time?
Whatever happened to that guy?
Phil, I'll put a link in the show notes for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to MC Hammer?
Yeah, whatever happened to him? He was really big.
He's a preacher now.
Yeah.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he's quite the big thing on Twitter too. On the Twitter.
Really?
On Twitter. Yeah.
Huh.
Just all you have to remember is do 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 do. Right? You can't touch this.
Yep.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'm really sorry that Steve has that big closet full of harem pants.
Yeah, which was MC's.
When he was with MC Hammer, it was a big MC Hammer fan for a while.
I don't think I ever, let's not even go there.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. The second biggest story of the week is what the heck's with the North Dakota getting more nerds than we got? What's that all about?
Can you believe that?
Where did you find this? I'm just kind of curious.
I believe it or not, it came up on Google News. So I was looking at Google News early this morning. And the article was, what are the nerdiest states in America? And of course, we'll have a link in the show notes. Are you lacking in nerdy friends? It may be time to move. And this organization has stately searched Facebook to discover who listed 12 nerdy subjects like Star Wars, Star Trek, Harry Potter, et cetera, et cetera. And then they ranked the states based on those keywords searched throughout Facebook. And so I looked at the list and I'm looking at it, blah, blah, blah. And oh, here's Wisconsin and North Dakota, 14 and 15 and blah, blah. Where's Minnesota? 36. What the hell?
Yeah, it's right behind California, where there's no nerds.
There's no nerds at all.
I think we need to be specific here. This is, nerds as defined by Star Trek, Star Wars, Harry Potter, and the like. Okay?
So that's not
necessarily what we would consider nerds or what we would more consider geeks.
Utah is number one, which is great.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, again, they've got lots of channels like Antenna TV. They're watching old reruns of Star Trek and, Star Wars movies. So,
So this is not exactly a stringent study
with
control groups.
I like how Nerd Hell, the last one.
Yeah, it's all the
Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
What? Nerds in Washington.
No. Yeah. That's the one I believe.
The net neutrality thing. That's why. There's no nerds there.
There we go. We just solved it.
See, it all comes together. You heard it here first on Minivate. That's exactly
right. Oh, my God.
All right. Correlation. It's all coming together in one big black hole known as Washington, D.C.
This is a Gawker site, too, so I don't believe them.
Oh, well.
Where this really? Is published. Yeah, this has got to be Gawker. It looks like it. It looks like they're CMS.
Is it?
It's IO9. Yeah, I don't think it's a Gawker site, but
really, they're using their CMS. I think
it looks like Lifehacker in terms of the CMS, right?
Uh-huh. See, it says that the for tech support, the help is help@gawker.com.
So you're right. You are.
I am a CMS.
You are a sleuth, my friend.
Whenever I see the same CMS, I say, oh, okay, that Nick guy is involved in this.
Some way, shape, or form.
That's right. Huh.
Well, let's talk about some of the other stories that are actually of note.
Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Can't touch this. Can't touch this.
Sorry.
Nice.
That was for Tim. That was for Tim. Now, is that under the 7-second rule for non-copyrighted?
It's 30 seconds. It's 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Oh, so I can play more. Okay.
Oh, yes, please do.
Oh my God!
So where do we segue from that?
I have no idea. I was kind of trying to figure out. I was going to segue into some other stories, and I thought I was getting great applause for that. And I thought,
were.
Wow, that's nice.
All right. Let's talk about something that I think is pretty cool, which is CourseCal. Who put this in the show notes about the St. Thomas professors have created this non-institution-based learning management system called CourseCal, and it looks really cool.
Yeah, no, I saw that and stuck it in.
Yeah. I think this is pretty interesting because that's been one of the things about the big deal LMSs is that they're really expensive, and others have tried to shoehorn WordPress and Drupal into LMSs, or they use Moodle, which has a user interface that looks like somebody did it in like 1999, and so what I couldn't find. Are they charging money for this or is it just free?
It says it's free to educators and students can pay $5.95 a course for the full featured platform, but the light version is free.
Got it.
So.
Huh. Well, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the nerdery.
Sorry,
finished.
It's quiet. It's very quiet here. Sorry.
Wow, yeah. that was a segue. I
just was just glancing at the article on CourseCal, and Lloyd Clidwin is one of the guys that's part of this project. Lloyd is a very active in the Google space and in the Android space here in the Twin Cities. He actually
runs
user groups. So always good to see guys that are active in the community doing great things. So anywho, sorry about that. Were going to say the nerdery.
Yeah, so the nerdery had their overnight website challenge. I have not seen this before. Tim, have they done a gallery of before and after comparisons?
Like, yeah, they started a couple of years ago.
I have never seen one. Okay, so in this Minneapolis St. Paul Business Journal article, there's actually before and after, and
it's also your opportunity to vote for
That's how they determine the winners.
Yeah, that some of these look really great.
I was kind of scrolling through a lot of them look very similar for one thing, but also I was kind of scrolling through and taking a look, and the one that to me didn't look like it changed much was, is it just me or does the KFAI site look really remarkably the same?
Well, it's a little bit better.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It's a little bit different.
But instead of having the, I don't know what the homepage used to look like, but.
Well, they have the before and after, so you can see them.
Well, the before though is their station schedule page. I don't know if that's the homepage.
Yeah.
So. But I think they're comparing schedule to schedule is what they've done here.
One of the things that kind of I saw when I looked at them is the nonprofits there before look a lot better than they have in the past.
Yes, they have.
Yeah.
So maybe they're scratching the bottom of the barrel here. You know, they have actually, you know, usable websites, and they're getting incrementally better.
Loving the Dragon Divas site.
Yeah, that's a fun one. We'll put a link in the show notes so people can
go take a look at it.
Yeah.
And then vote. Go ahead.
Vote.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what else is going on in the Minnesota area? I'm waiting for the big, Bemidji startup to happen or something. I mean, I haven't seen anything yet.
Julio highlighted the guys over at Twin Cities OMG Transit. So that application that they're working on for some great transit maps and scheduling. So that's, you know, a lot of those guys work out of Cocoa. So it's good to see again.
Oh, really?
Okay. People make things happen.
So yeah, they have Android and they're getting ready for iOS, right?
I like the fact that they led with Android.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't happen a lot. Yeah.
No, it doesn't. So.
Yep. Well,
Do take a look at that if you're an Android user and do tend to take the bus. But it also moves beyond the bus. It also keeps track of what car to go and I believe. Oh, they're trying to integrate Zipcar and Lyft and Uber and things like that.
Right. Well, and then Julio also did that article on two local Kickstarters pay off, one spectacularly, and talked about the a counterbalance pen.
That's a kind of an oddball product.
Yeah, well, I mean, it wouldn't be if you were using any of the design apps. But I don't know.
How much did they raise? Are they the ones that raised a ton, or was it the other one?
No, it was the other one.
The micro field bag.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
From Pat and Quill.
Yeah.
So the pen has raised $7,000 on a $5,000 goal. And there's 23 days to go. So, you know.
I really like how Julio finds all this stuff.
I think it was just after the free pen.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah.
Well, that's why he's been all over the Tesla. Because he's hoping
he's going to get
one of those.
Tesla, yeah.
They're gonna.
He wants a review unit.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Elon Musk will call him up. Julio, would you like to test drive this for, I don't know, 6 months?
Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
Sure.
Why not?
Great. That's why I got into the blogging business. I was working for the free stuff.
That's right. That's the way you get paid, baby, and free stuff.
Yeah.
Well, so did you, I was going to say, did you guys see this story about Logic PD? Were you even aware of Logic PD, you guys?
Yeah. No. And their IoT Internet company. Of Things play. Yeah.
Yeah. This outfit's been around for a long time. They partnered with some outfit in California, I think, called C, what's it called again? C Control.
Yep.
SEE Control. But apparently, this Logic PD is kind of a sleeper. This company traces back to 1960, and they have facilities in Minneapolis, Boston, and San Diego, including their main facility at 411 Washington Avenue North, and they have a manufacturing office or manufacturing services center in Eden Prairie and one in Montevideo. I had vaguely heard of this company when a fella I know, a double E, kind of did his internship or something there. But they sound like they're a major one-stop shop, kind of an integrator player for IoT. So companies that are looking to explore that, you know, opportunities in that market locally here, well, all over the country, would be well to check out Logic PD. They look like a very serious, substantial organization.
Well, and they also have a separate site called logicpdinsights.com, and they're having a hackathon on April 23rd through the 24th to address real market challenges and uncover new insights through the mashup of connected sensor data with publicly available data sets and APIs. So that reminds me of what was the map mashup offering? The programmable web. You remember that?
Oh, that's still going strong. That site, you mean?
Yeah, but remember how, I mean, they were the first ones to highlight hundreds of Google Map mashups.
Oh, yeah, right.
And, yeah, that was always pretty cool. And so if PD Insights is moving in that direction, this could be kind of interesting.
Too bad that hackathon already happened, or we could have announced it last week. 23rd and 24th was Wednesday and Thursday.
That is so funny. I don't know why stuck in my brain today is the 22nd.
It's the 26th.
It's the 26th, dude. You're 4 days older than you thought.
So did anybody go to that?
Anybody out there?
Oh, how funny. How funny. See, that's what happens when you do shows early in the morning. Anyway.
So true. So true.
Yeah. Well, so what else is going on?
I see this little thing for my 9-to-5 Mac that I believe. Tim, did you put this in here just to feed Graham and Steve a little fodder?
Right, a little Apple TV action.
Oh, gosh. And Apple working on Siri for Apple TV. No, the heck you say?
I can Well, we'll see what happens. But could you imagine? Hey, Apple TV, turn to, it's like, no, I'd rather just use my remote.
Yeah, right. You just sit there as you're, instead of surfing with your finger going, no.
Somebody down the hall is like, what is he doing in
there? That's about it.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to make me run right out and buy an Apple TV.
What happened to the watch? Tim, you've been kind of keeping an eye on that. What's happening to the watch? I want the watch.
No watch. No watch, it looks like.
Well, Tim Cook is saying that we're really close at Apple to releasing the next big thing.
I think the next big thing will be an Apple TV.
Do you?
It'll be a redesigned set-top box. It won't be a TV.
Yeah, I agree. Right. I agree.
But it'll be big. It'll have Siri in it.
Yeah.
They'll have a games API so that developers can develop games for it.
Well, and what I'm hoping it also acts as a media server, which I doubt, but it would be nice if, you know, you could hang a bus powered terabyte drive off it or something and throw all your music and videos and everything else on that.
Well, that's like that ex-Apple guy just announced, that Tim Butcher with his Live Home, a $300 media server. Did you see that one?
Yep.
But, what did you guys think about, apparently Nike is talking like Nike Fuel Band's going to be part of, or is pretty tight with Apple. And so the talk is that that's where the so-called iWatch or wearable is going to be going, or one place it's going to be going. There was a story on Mashable about that. Nothing's been announced, of course, by Apple, but it sounds like Nike's talking about it, like it's pretty much a fait accompli.
Yeah, they're getting out. So the whatever Apple does will be probably fitness related or health related.
But also, basically, you know, people kind of looked at what Nike did when the articles came out that said they were laying off all their engineers, the Fuel Band and so forth. But then a couple of posts that I read from some different developers were talking about how it made total perfect sense because Apple has that M7 chip inside the iPhone 5S, and they'll have it in the new iPads. And that's the direction they're going, is all that stuff's built into the chipset. And so the focus is on the app.
Yep, and software.
Why
do they need hardware? Nike didn't, you know, why do hardware? You know, you just, you know, it wasn't necessary.
Yep.
So, yeah. You know, but the other thing, going back to Apple TV, did you see where it's now more than $1 billion business? And Tim Cook says, I don't think we can keep calling this a hobby anymore. It's more than $1 billion business or product.
Oh my gosh.
So you go. People don't think it's much of anything, but you know, it's a billion with a B.
Well, it sells a lot of content.
Yep.
You know, they're probably not making a lot on the hardware.
No, no. That's right.
Well, so, now that we're talking about Apple, because it's, you know, we always figure out a way to do that just because Graham and Steve insist on it.
And we have 7 times more shares than we used to have.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what do you think about the split? I was just going to talk about that.
Well, it's nice because, you know, it makes it much more affordable for the average Joe. I mean, it'll be down, you know, below $100 a share when the split happens, which will be June, I think.
Well, and I just sold a bunch because I'm just way too overweight in Apple stock. And now, as a percentage, I'm sure it's going to go up.
You know, you can feel free to gift that if you'd like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And it just roared above $570 a share.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Like I said, feel free to gift that next time, Steve.
Mm. There you go. Hey, I got to tell you that I hung on to that stock through thick and thin. And when I was sitting at a family event and having my IT-oriented nephews and cousins laughing at me, giving me shit for being an Apple supporter and all of that. And then when I went back to work for Apple in the 90s in the pre-press space, really having people roll their eyes like, are you serious? and I remember when we were at Amation touting the fact that Apple had just hit $6 billion in revenue as a company. And now it's what? $47 billion for the quarter.
Yeah.
Oh, my crazy. God. Unbelievable.
Yep. It's on a tear. But, of course, the press had to pick out the one negative thing about how iPad sales weren't as high as expected, you know, and just pound and pound on that, you know.
But, you know, I do think that's interesting, though, because it's I've been so enamored with this Retina MacBook Pro that I've begun doing more and more on that and less on my iPad because I can't just take my iPad to be productive because I need the apps that are on my
the hard MacBook. Drive.
I'm sure you guys are all in the same position because if you want to create a document and you've got to cut and paste and move and try this and do that and all of, you know, assemble something or even assemble a presentation, you need to have all that multitasking capability and the ability to get to all these different apps. And yes, you can do a lot of that on the iPad, but first you've got to go there and then you've got to hold and save the image to your photos. Then you got to go back to Keynote. Then you've got to insert that photo into, you know, so you're going through a lot of steps.
Right.
And
right.
It's just a pain in the butt.
Yeah, it's not particularly productive for a sophisticated business user. And, you know, that's what they're saying is the iPad's becoming a great content consumption device. It has been all along, but that's how most people are using them. They're using it for Netflix and all that kind of stuff. And not to speak of its strong usage in schools. I mean, let's face it, it's been huge, you know. A huge enhancement for education, and that's not going away. But yeah, there are those that are saying, oh, so it really isn't replacing the PC. Well, no, it never really can for a certain set of users like us. You know, I don't run with my iPad when I'm going somewhere important. I might carry it with my iPad Air, but I've got my iPad Air with me when I'm going someplace important to do work, you know. So it has its place, but the other thing that wasn't pointed out in the articles is they were comparing or the fact that it was down from the quarter last year, that was an atypical quarter. There were reasons why it didn't compare well with the previous quarter. So, you know, I don't think the iPad business is a big problem for Apple. I mean, it's going to keep moving right along with new models. And I saw one guy was bitching of where that when they stopped support of the original iPad, that's when they really screwed up. You know, it's leaving us poor iPad 1 users in the dust. You know, come on, you know, 4-year-old device that costs $400. You know,
well, and that's
the guy thinks they're going to support it forever.
Well, he's probably the same guy that's bitching about the fact that he can't use those 3.5-inch floppy disks that,
yeah, that's right,
that he used to use. You know. I got all my files on those.
I still have a bunch of those.
Oh, so do I. I'm keeping them.
I'll trade you for some Apple stock.
Yeah, right.
I still actually have a drive, a USB floppy drive. Now, how many of you have one of those around when you need to read one of those pups?
I have a SyQuest drive, I have a Zip drive, and I have a Jazz drive.
There you go. You can't give them up. You never know when you might need one day.
That's right.
Exactly right.
Yeah, but I've still got those two big floppy drives. What was the inch, 5-point-something-inch floppy drive?
5.25. Yeah.
5.25. Two of them. Remember when you got dual 5.25s in my compact luggable? I still got that, baby. If you ever need to read one of those, just come on over.
Isn't that where Steve stores that copy of Hammer Time that he just played?
Yeah, exactly. No, I keep that on my Newton.
5.25.
Listen, we're running short of time, and we still have to get to a tip of the week. We have to get to a security tip of the week.
We have to get to what? Steve's security tip
of the week. Every week I'm reminded how lazy we are. We haven't replaced that.
Hey, you got the audio equipment, buddy. You can do it.
I know.
All right. So the security tip of the week is the fact that there are about 150 million apps or apps that have been downloaded 150 million times that are vulnerable to the heartbleed bug. Say that right. 10 times fast.
I will.
And so this is kind of a short one, but there's a new security heartbleed scanner called the CM Security Heartbleed Scanner, a brand new free app that offers
heartbleed
protection for Android users. So you can run the app, it'll go out and it'll scan your phone or your tablet and tell you whether or not you have a heartbleed vulnerable application. And then Tim, you put another link in here about Chromebleed Checker. Is that for Android as well?
It's for your Chrome browser. Any platform.
Any platform. Yeah. Well, that was the one that we had in last week's note, right?
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I just put that in
All right. So here's a question for you, Tim, because there's also, I'll put a link in the show notes to this too. There's also a free Sophos mobile security app for Android that'll go out and look for malware on your phone. And you're a sophisticated user, Tim, but you root your device or devices, don't you?
Nope. Not anymore.
Oh, really? Okay. Because that was one of the things that they talked about in this article is even if you're a sophisticated user, to never, ever, ever root your device, because then the apps have full access to everything.
Well, you can lock it back down. I mean, you can root just the ROM it, and then you can unroot it. But now that I run Nexus devices, they're always updated, so I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Okay.
So they're always at the latest version.
Gotcha. All right. That's good.
Good.
So that's my tip.
There's your tip of the week.
Yep. Download the free. We'll have a link to the Google Play Store and you're off and running.
Well, tomorrow is Technovation's Appapalooza event. And
no, that's in the future, right?
Yep, that's tomorrow.
Okay.
That would be tomorrow.
Coming up.
At the TIES Training Center in Falcon Heights.
Yep.
Young girls teamed up to create apps and present their pitches. Be a great event.
Yep. So what else is happening this week?
Well,
or coming up anyway.
Now, coming up, the only other new thing on here, we'll put all the links in, but Omnichannel 14, that's that SPS Commerce event that you put in, Graham.
Yeah, for retail. Yeah, I'd love to go to the event, and it overlaps directly on Midwest Mobile Summit in Fargo, where I know Phil and I, at least, are going to be.
Yep.
So that kind of rules out Omnichannel, but that sounds like a wonderful event if you're in retail. Wow.
Yeah.
So check that out. And then that's a popular time of the spring, I guess, for events, because May 6th, Tuesday, is the MHTA Spring Conference, which I'll miss because I'm in Fargo. But are you going, Steve?
I'm sure going to try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you and or Tim would be the only ones there, because We're going to be partying in Fargo.
That's right. We're going to hang out with the nerdiest state in the nation.
Well,
no, Utah's 15.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. 15. Yeah.
Now, my mom was born in Moorhead. So I've got family all over Fargo and Moorhead, unfortunately, and North Dakota. But unfortunately, good family friends sold their farm. So you guys can't go out there and smell the pig barn. And I apologize for that.
Oh,
but,
shoot.
That was an experience that I'm sorry that everyone can't enjoy.
It's an experience that can't be described.
I swear to God, it's like a baseball bat in the face.
Oh,
that's swung the smell. By Babe Ruth.
That's the smell of money, my friend. My the God. Smell of money.
Oh my God. And everybody, they all kept, we'd be eating dinner and this pig smell would be wafting into the house on the breeze. And I just remember asking at dinner, I was probably 12 years old, saying, how can you guys stand that? And then they looked at me and said, stand what?
It's true.
Totally. It's true. It's like, you just don't smell it anymore.
You get used to it.
Oh my Lord. All right, boys.
When the wind is just right over the lagoon, it's just a beautiful smell.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, there's lots going on this week and next, and we'll talk about more next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
Yes, sir.
Take care.
Have a good one.
See you guys.